Welcome to the third episode of the official SBGAN podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Nicely.
Here I am again for the third podcast and for the third guest. The third guest is Dr. Nadja Heiden. Dr. Heiden works in Vienna. There, her interest is principally in the parenteral alimentation of the premature infant. I've been sent a CV for Dr. Heiden. And that's all very well, but you'd think that like Minerva, she sprang forth completely armored from the brow of Zeus, from the faculty of medicine. All of a sudden, there she was, a fully-fledged professor of pediatric gastroenterology and hepatology and alimentation. I don't know a thing about where she comes from or where she was at university or how she trained or how she found her way into pediatrics and then into pediatric intensive care and then into pediatric neonatal intensive care. And can you see the Matryoshka dolls getting smaller and smaller into pediatric premature infant parenteral alimentation? So, Dr. Heiden, that was a long introduction. Start at the beginning. Where were you born and where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in a small town in Upper Austria, Linz. I was raised there by my grandmother for the first 10 years and then moved to Vienna with my parents. So they were very young parents and were divorced and were still in university. And then with 10 years, I moved to Vienna and to the big city and was impressed by the busyness of the city. I went to the gymnasium and then to medical school, which was very overcrowded at this time. So after medical school, we had to wait very long for an appointment to become a resident or a fellow. And went to pediatrics because I did some studies there during my medical school and got more and more involved in these little patients and was fascinated by them because it's a very general view on the patient. A pediatrician responsible for everything, the ears, the throat, the lungs, the gut, and so everything is in one hand, and this was very interesting for me to get a global overview of a patient. And during my training, I went on the neonatal intensive care unit, and I was fascinated by these little patients who were so immature and grew up under my hands, and therefore I stepped into neonatal intensive care unit, and also the stress there and the resuscitation. I really became to love it. This was very interesting, and it gave me a real kick to work there.
That's fascinating. I admire people like you who every day go out and seek some more adrenaline. But I'm exactly the other way. You run towards stress and embrace it, and I ran away from it and became a pathologist.
That's also interesting.
It is interesting. I'm a pediatric pathologist, and what interested me there was exactly what interested you about pediatrics. That is, it's not just one thing, it's the whole kid.
Right.
Well, and then I went and ruined it all by going into pediatric liver disease, but that's a different matter. So here we are now. You're in the intensive care unit, and you're trying to bring these kids along, and that helps me understand why nutrition became so important.
Right.
These kids, they're too young to eat, aren't they?
Right. Yeah, especially the very small premature infants. You know, prematurity is defined as an infant who is born before the 37th week of gestation. A normal pregnancy has 40 weeks. And actually, we are able to help infants up from 22 weeks to survive. But below 28 weeks, they are really, really immature. And these are the smallest and most vulnerable group. And to make them grow is very difficult because they can't eat. They have no coordinating sucking, swallowing, breathing coordination. And therefore, we need parental nutrition to make them grow. You start also with enteral feedings, but parental feedings are also very necessary because the gut is very immature. You have to make the gut used to get to tolerate enteral nutrition, and therefore parental nutrition is very, very important for this group of patients.
That I understand. And among the things that appear on your CV are a set of guidelines from 2018, a set of guidelines for all of Europe put together by Espigan for how to manage the various aspects of parenteral alimentation. You've given us a shelf full of cookbooks. Is everybody in Europe supposed to give up their regional cuisine?
Yes, these guidelines are not based on taste, like it's in enteral nutrition, where taste is very important. This is based on what the infant or what the preterm infant needs. So macronutrients, micronutrients, fluid maintenance, and beside these, the chapters on the macro and micronutrients, there are a few other guidelines containing, for example, how to deal with long-term parental nutrition, how to standardize parental nutrition, and also home parental care, because some infants don't stay in the hospital. They are discharged on parental nutrition, and the parents make it at home. And this is also included in these guidelines. So it's a very complex guideline covering several other topics like the basic macro and micronutrient support.
So these guidelines were issued in 2018. And I'm curious as to what the impetus was for bringing out the guidelines in the first place. Was it the impression of Espigan that there was substantial variation from institution to institution, possibly with variation in outcome associated with that? What was the need to say this is how it should be done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so these guidelines are an update of former published guidelines, and the impetus for bringing these very diverse topics together was to give to help physicians preparing the right composition of parental nutrition to make the baby grow. In the former days, we only used glucose and calcium and phosphorus just to maintenance fluid and bring some volume in, and we didn't care for the aspects of growth. And growth is extremely important especially for preterm infant, but also for very sick infants, to get a sufficient nutrient supply to recover from their illness. So if the patient is stunting not growing, it is very negative for the long-term outcome in especially for preterm infants. So it is important to give a sufficient supply of all the nutrients, macronutrients and micronutrients. And the Espigan was bringing together all these different studies and aspects of parental nutrition and put them together in a guideline. And this guideline was first published, I think, in 2006 and was now updated with the most recent published literature.
That helps me understand a little bit better that this is an ongoing project and is being fine-tuned as advances in the understanding of nutrition per se and as advances in other aspects of premature infant care move step by step to make it possible to do a better job for these tiny babies.
Right, exactly.
That was 2018. How are you monitoring the effects, the results of these guidelines across Europe, or from institution to institution, or within an institution, as to the difference that they have made in the care of these babies. I know it's going to be difficult to pull out, to isolate the effects of advances in nutrition from advances in other aspects of premature infant care, but isn't that one of the things that we should be looking at?
Absolutely right. So the guideline contains advice for the monitoring in the hospital. So if you are on short-term or on long-term parental nutrition, there is some guidance what to monitor and how often you should monitor several values in the blood. For example, red blood cell control or serum triglycerides, so fat and amino acid monitoring. So this is for in hospital and for, of course, the growth parameters, anthropometry, but also long-term aspects when you are at home on parental nutrition, that you do your vitamin D status, for example. And recently, we were doing a survey in the German-speaking countries on how these new guidelines were implemented in the hospitals. And we were asking for problems neonatologists and pharmacists had with their guidelines, if they are implemented, if they can follow every part of these guidelines, for example, administration of all the nutrients, if all the nutrients are, or if all the nutrient solutions are available. And so there were very interesting results of this survey. I think most of 300 people or 300 neonatologists and pharmacists were participating. And what were the basic findings? We found that there were some problems, especially in the prescription. You know, the Aspigan recommends to use prescription software to make accurate and standardized prescriptions that everybody can read. So readability is one big problem. And a lot of neonatal units or pharmacies in a very high income country were not able to use prescription softwares because they don't have them in the hospital, or the software couldn't communicate with the pharmacy. So this was one issue that was really addressed to improve these prescription process. And there were several other issues that not all neonatal intensive care units have access to standardized parental nutrition. So they do more or less a cookbook medicine, where they put it all together on the ward, or where the pharmacy produces it on an everyday basis. So standardization and safety are real issues that has to be addressed also for the future in terms of parental prescription. That's, I think, very important, and there has to be done a lot in the future to make it more safe, and to also look on issues like compatibility and safety. Yeah.
Well, once you set up standards, then those standards become something to which individuals or institutions or even supra-institutional organizations, national bodies, can be held. If you're not doing it according to the standard, then there are approaches available to compel you to come up to the standard. Working, for example, with hospital accreditation bodies to say, this must be done better. I'm reminded of one of my teachers in art class who used a ruler in order to check whether or not I was doing my mechanical drawing properly. She used it as a tool to see if I was doing things right. And if I wasn't, well, she would whack me with it. Esbjerg could, through working with national or supranational organizations, compel compliance. Is that underway?
Well, I think one thing Espigan could be an innovator in this question would be to provide a new prescription software or a standardized or all European or worldwide prescription software which can be used by everybody. And I think the programming is not the problem, because that's not very sophisticated. But to get a certificate for it, a CE certificate, is cost intensive, and this could be perhaps covered by the Espigan. And the second issue is the hospitals have different digital infrastructures, and to implement such a unique software in all the hospitals could be a challenge, because the local infrastructure is so different from country to country, and even from hospital to hospital, that makes it real difficult. But this could be an innovation the Espigan can set to improve the care of these patients.
Well, Espigan then is working as best it can to make certain that throughout Europe, and as you commented, in mainland China as well, uniform approaches are being taken to parenteral alimentation in the very small premature infant. And we now come to what extent this can be extended to less well-off countries outside Europe. What relevance do these guidelines have? Are they just a dream, given the amount of technology and given the amount of resources that have to be used in order to utilize them? What's your opinion on that?
Yes, well, of course, we have feedback from low-income and middle-income countries, and the situation there is very diverse. Sometimes, you know, we have this countryside with no access to medical care, and we have the largest cities, so very diverse situation, and also the availability of devices for intravenous access, or these ready-to-use bags, which are a real good innovation for these countries. Some of them do not have access to them, but ready-to-use bags providing standardized basic nutrition for this infant could be a solution for these countries, because they don't have to mix it on the ward. There is no contamination risk. They just take the bag, which they can store at room temperature, put them on the bedside. And the only thing you need more or less is intravenous access for the baby. So this might be an opportunity to improve the parental nutrition, or the nutritional situation of these of the infants in these countries. But of course, these bags are expensive, and also, companies might not be interested in these markets. So I think there is also it's also important that companies providing parental nutrition for preterm infants, term infants, or children should have a look on these markets and see the potential. I think that might be an innovation for these countries, yeah.
That sounds like a grand idea. That's the engineering. We have a solution. How do we get it to these kids? That's the engineering. Now, the basic science of parenteral nutrition, where is that moving, and where has it moved since the guidelines were put out in 2018?
Yes, I think the guidelines are, well, the receipts are already very sophisticated. There is some work on the nutrients, single nutrients, like for example lipid solutions, to improve them. But these are, you know, these are minor issues. These are just a little bit cookbook medicine. How can we improve the one of out of 20 nutrients. But I think the future aspects are to invest and to investigate how to improve safety, compatibility of solutions, to make it more safe for the preterm infants, and also, as I mentioned before, these prescription softwares to establish in every neonatal unit or in every pediatric intensive care unit to have access to software that makes it much more safer and accurate to prescribe parental nutrition. I think these are really the future aspects we should work on.
That and the monitoring aspects, the need to change course, the need to adjust the course. Again, that monitoring software or those monitoring programs must be very important.
Yes, and it could also be a resource of new research, because if we, for example, one country or all over Europe uses the same software, we can put our data together and get more information on how we're doing that our babies grow. We get more feedback because we have big data trials to get more information on that and to learn more quickly how to improve our management in these patients. So putting the data together is always a problem in intensive care medicine because we don't have that much patients. We have 100 patients per year or 200 patients per year in one unit, and usually the power calculations to get real reliable information from trials, that what are you really doing, or to answer your research questions, these power calculations are much larger. So working together country-wise or all over Europe would be a very important thing in these questions.
And to do that, well, unified software in prescribing, unified software in compounding, unified software in monitoring, all of those would markedly facilitate, markedly increase the size of the reservoir of data on which you could draw to make things better.
Right.
Got it. It's almost time to conclude the podcast. But before we do that, what are your take-home messages for the auditors today?
I think important is to identify the patient who needs parental nutrition. It's very clear that very preterm infant needs parental nutrition, but also to identify the sick patient who needs parental nutrition to improve their situation. The second thing is to provide adequate parental nutrition, so provide all the macro and micronutrients the baby needs, either as an individualized parental nutrition bag or a standardized nutrition bag, whatever is available. The third thing is to really try to improve the safety and accuracy, how to apply parental nutrition, either by prescription software or improvement of the other processes, communication to the pharmacy, involvement of a pharmacist, so that we can do better in the care of these patients. I think these are the three key issues.
Great. Thank you very much. But we now need to go back to Linz, those first 10 years in Upper Austria, and to Vienna, and to your shift to the big city. Are you still a country girl?
A little bit, yes. And I will go back soon to Linz and be head of the neonatal department there in April. So
That's wonderful.
I go back to the
you.
Countryside, yeah.
Now, I know any number of people who, they say, I may be a doctor, but that doesn't excuse me from all of the other things that I need to do in my life. I've got a husband to take care of, and God knows he's hopeless. And my kids, how are they coming along? In effect, when you're there in the lecture room talking to 200 medical students, somewhere in the back of your mind is, I have to go to the store and get Lou Roll on the way home. All of those work-life balance issues. How do you manage that?
Well, I think for every woman, it's very difficult when you have two children and a husband. So it's the same, I think, as in every other working woman. It's always, every day is a challenge, more or less, to organize bringing the kids to the sports or whatever, and to manage the house. But I have a very supportive partner, and therefore we could manage it, or we can manage it. And I have also a supporting family, and I think that's very important to ask for help in the management of a family and to work as a full-time physician and researcher. Yeah.
But you've already told us that when you're confronted with stress, you run toward it, not away from it.
Right. So that's an advantage.
So talking about stress, how about your work on this committee? Has this been stressful? I imagine it has, but has it been rewarding as well?
No, it's not stressful. It's really, it's, you know, I came to the nutrition committee during the pandemic, so our first meetings were on Zoom, and it wasn't possible to meet the people, the experts, face-to-face, and we had our first meeting in Italy 2 months ago, and it was, it was really nice to see them face-in-face, to discuss with them. We are a very diversified group. We are pediatric gastroenterologists interested in nutrition, and we are also neonatologists, and we are also allied health professionals, and we're working together. And everybody brings so many input from their daily work in the topics which are different, which are diversified also. So we have a few neonatal topics, like enteral nutrition is our next approach of the preterm infants. But we also have topics from the gastroenterologists, like IBD nutrition or short bowel syndrome nutrition, where we work also together with other committees. So it's really interesting to exchange with other experts and to be a member of this group.
Fantastic. We close very frequently with a few standardized questions, one of which is, what was the worst experience in your career?
Well, I can't think of a specific event, but I think whenever you lose a patient, it's always a very sad experience, and I'm still not used to it.
Of course. Young colleagues, here you are, you want to make a career. How should they go about finding their way to a niche that fits them as well as your niche fits you?
Well, I think they should be tough, especially women, and never lose the sight of the goal. That's important.
Pediatric gastroenterology, hepatology, and nutrition. Over the last 5 years, taking a view that goes beyond your particular area, what's the most important innovation in your eyes?
Well, I think, and that is also the feedback I get from younger colleagues, that the expansion of educational programs in the SBGUN is a real innovation, especially the hands-on trainings, the summer schools, the master classes. There was a lot of effort put in this in these programs, and I think the young people are really, they participate, they meet each other, they network, and I think this is a real good and an important innovation of the SBGUN.
Fantastic. And 5 years from now, what do you see SBGUN contributing, and how do you see it contributing better?
Well, in my field, I think there is there will be a lot of improvement in the management of intensive care, but also in enteral nutrition of preterm and term infants. There's a lot of research going on in the properties of human milk, you know, these oligosaccharides, stem cells, extraventricular vesicles, probiotics. I think there is a lot of innovation that will be coming up during the next 5 years.
In nutrition in particular.
Yes.
Dr. Hayden, thank you so much for this. We're at the end of our podcast, and we, at the end of every podcast, make it a point to ask the interviewee for something about his or her country that will remind us all that although Espigan is about unity and about standardization and about all the other things that you've shared with us that make it possible to gather larger databases and to make progress in scientific medicine, yet we're all individual countries, individual people. So you are from Austria. What is your Austrian song?
Well, I've chosen Rock Me Amadeus from Falco, and I love that song because it has a lot of drive, and I think it represents our country real properly.
That's just great. Everybody knows that song.
If you would like to listen to the song, check out our Spotify playlist, Espigan's Favorite Songs.
Everybody knows that as representative of Austria, so you've chosen something national and international. Great.
Well, thank you very much for this great interview and for listening. And I hope that the listeners of this podcast have some new ideas that they can implement in their hospitals and stay safe in these hard times. Thank you.